While we're waiting for the bill to be passed out, are there any comments or questions from the members? Senator Rust, why don't you, the bill's being passed up, but why don't you go ahead and start talking about your bill?
Madam Chair, my state representative, Sandra Peterson, serves on the Governor's Workforce Development Council, and she brought this bill to me to introduce in the Senate, and she has been working on it in the House. And it's very similar, as you pointed out, to or the goals are very similar to the ones that you mentioned that you had in the bill that you described. It does deal with a transition plan for high school students, but starts with the ninth grade and would require school districts to help all students, not just college-bound students, but all students, no later than ninth grade, to explore college, obviously, but also career interests, and to develop a plan that can be reviewed on a regular basis for making a successful transition to post-secondary education and employment. It requires that the plans include an appropriate academic plan for completing a college and career-ready curriculum, emphasizes rigor and high expectations, helps students identify personal learning styles, integrate strong academic content into career-focused courses, identifies appropriate counseling and other supports and assistance for students and their families, and identifies collaborative partnerships with relevant institutions, agencies, and employers, and then requires at least an annual review, and it does have an appropriation attached to it. I would appreciate if you would hear the testimony from the Workforce Council and from Ms. Ammons.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. For the record, my name is Mo Amundson, and I am chairperson of the Education Committee for the Governor's Workforce Development Council. And first, I'm going to have Brian Lindsley, our executive director, go over some of the goals of the council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brian Lindsley. I'm the executive director of the Governor's Workforce Development Council.
Welcome.
Just like to take a moment to tell you very briefly about who the GWDC is and why we addressed this recommendation, and then turn it back to Ms. Amundson to further describe our recommendation. The GWDC is the state's workforce investment board, and we're mandated and funded by the Federal Workforce Investment Act of 1998, and our role is also further defined under state statute. Our 31 members represent business, labor, community-based organizations, education, local elected officials, local workforce councils, state agencies, and the Minnesota legislature. In order to achieve our mission, which is to analyze and recommend workforce development policies to the governor and legislature, the council creates committees that work and investigate policies and develop them, and those then get approved by the council. In 2006, we formed the Education Action Committee, and they came up with a recommendation that you have before you. In 2008, the council, which includes the Commissioner of Education, approved that recommendation. Our recommendation specifically addressed the fact that Minnesota lacks a comprehensive strategy for informing high school students about the array of opportunities that exist after graduation. With that, I'll turn it back to Ms. Amundson. Thank you.
Ms. Amundson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We believe that this is an essential component of workforce development so that all students leave high school informed and identified about career and college post-secondary opportunities, whether it's a certificate, diploma, AS. But we know that by 2010, the end of this year, every student will need at least some post-secondary education. And while many schools are taking up that challenge already, as the St. Paul District and the Minneapolis District, the rural schools and the outside metro areas, schools don't have that policy. And actually, the state doesn't have a strategic policy to address that issue. And as we need more and more workforce competitive people that are globally competitive, that go from nation leading to world competing, we have to inform kids of their choices and what their choices can mean for the rest of their lives. I just want to read to you, and I should have brought this as a handout too, but I have from the National Governors Association, Achieving Graduation for All, and I will make sure that I supply that to Senator Riss so that she can pass the information along. One way that states begin to deal with student disengagement in high school, basically attacking the dropout rate, is by creating personalized learning plans. Students with a clear path to their future may be more likely to remain in school. Governors can require personal learning plans for all students as a way to connect students to adults in schools, cultivate future interests, and connect schools to post-secondary and career options. For example, in Delaware, it requires counselors to develop individual learning plans for all students. Virginia will require the same plan this year. These plans will help students tailor supports and provide students accurate assessments of the careers, the courses, the knowledge, the training, and the skills they're going to need to pursue a career pathway. We have initiatives across the state through the Governor's Workforce Development Council that addresses the needs of workforce, and we know that we need to have every student in the workforce. If students have no career plan, if they can't determine what they can do or reach their potential, then we're losing those students and they're dropping out of school. I want to address a little bit the portion of this bill that has costs assessed with it. We have been looking for very creative funding streams versus state funding for this, and we've come up with a few recommendations versus what we originally put on here. And the amount that we put on here was just a general amount of money that it could cost the state, but Minneapolis and St. Paul, as I said, have already have those plans in place, and obviously they have the biggest numbers of students in the state. So the cost would be significantly less, and we think we could do that with possibly some funding from the Office of Higher Ed, possibly some Perkins funding for those schools that get Perkins funding. And so we're still looking at various ways to fund this versus state funding, because we know that that's not possible.
Well, Ms. Amundson, at our hearing, I think we were told that, I don't know about these other programs that you mentioned in your brochure, but Naviance is in maybe 70 schools based on funding they got from the Office of Higher Education, from the federal government.
I think it's over 115.
Over 115, yeah. Well, some did it on their own, and some did get help. Like Minneapolis and St. Paul, I think, did it on their own, and some of those schools got help from the Office of Higher Education. But, you know, I mean, we could look at these figures a little bit more, but we were really told that to start the system would be about $5 a student, and to maintain it would be about $2 or $3 a student, plus training. So when you think of this is a computer-based system, what counselors may be doing now in terms of mailing out stuff to their students at 44 cents, you know, plus printing costs, that's a pretty reasonable amount. And, you know, it does make the counselors' jobs a lot more efficient. They're able to kind of double their work efficiencies from what they said. And since that's about where we're off with our ratio, that's kind of a good deal. That's like, Mr. Stanton, that's like saving money with technology. So if there was some way that with you and our office and Senator Rest and Representative Peterson and the Department of Education that we could get, you know, kind of invite the school districts to do kind of like a bulk purchase of a service like Naviance that has within it the six-year plan plus a lot of other, you know, opportunities to pursue careers or look a college search or scholarship search, and just besides simple communication between parents and students, I think that is something we might be able to do, even if we did have a very limited amount of money.
Madam Chair, it was also pointed out to me that some of the research to produce this kind of student-friendly software is being undertaken by the University of Minnesota and by MinSCU, and that that collaboration might eventually end up in being able to provide these surveys and ways of keeping these reports at no cost to school districts, that it would just be available to them. So I think there's a lot of creativity that's going on in this area that is not just the private sector programs like Naviance, but just in higher education in general. And of course, enlightened self-interest kind of project for them, because MinSCU and the University of Minnesota certainly want students coming to them who are well prepared, mm-hmm. And whose expectations are in line with reality, and that they have been planning well for 4 years rather than get to a MinSCU institution or of any kind or the University of Minnesota and then wonder, why didn't I know this 3 years ago? And so, and maybe have to take remedial classes or catch-up classes of some kind, which they wouldn't have had to do if their planning had been undertaken earlier. So it is a matter of real interest to our own public institutions to have these students well prepared with regard to their expectations and what they activities they've undertaken in high school.
Our eagle-eyed Mr. Fuller has found what we may think may be a grammatical error. Maybe it's intentional, and that's on page 113, at the very last word, or. Should that be and? Certainly we want people to be employed.
Well, you go back to people who say and or, and the correct thing is to say and, even when you mean or.
Then Senator Lynch moves that on page 113.
No, Madam Chair.
I think Senator Wicker disagrees.
Yeah. Well, you don't necessarily. I
it's fair.
Go to post-secondary education. You may go right to employment. I guess the distinction.
Well,
whatever the committee.
What Senator Ress said, though, is that when we could say and or. But if you don't, the correct thing to do is say and, if you want to say and or. And implies or.
Whatever.
As long as that doesn't get lost.
You think it's correct the way it is?
Yes.
Don't you want people eventually, though, after post-secondary, to go to employment? But they could.
Sure,
a successful transition to post-secondary and a successful transition to employment. Or a successful transition to post-secondary and employment.
Or a successful transition to employment.
Yes, I said that. It can be one of three things. It can be post-secondary, employment, or post-secondary and employment. Okay, we're going to vote on this. See who wins. Who's going to move to I'm only going to take a motion to delete or and change it to and. Who would like to make that motion? Oh, I think I'm going to lose this vote. This is at least
I'll bring in a copy of Thrall.
All right. All right, Mr. Fuller loses. Okay, any other comments? I don't care if
Madam
we delete
Chair.
The appropriations. Do you want to delete the appropriations? Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, I have a question, and I think this might be a really simple question. But in the Governor's Workforce Development Council, and this is a fine proposal, but I wonder, I sort of feel like we're bringing forward this grand plan with this price tag, and I wondered if we would be bringing forward this plan if, in fact, we had counselors in our high schools to begin with. If we had counselors in our high schools at an adequate number, it strikes me that legislation like this would perhaps not be necessary. So just a comment. I mean, we do not have adequate numbers of guidance counselors in Minnesota in our high schools.
Actually, what I think, that's a very good point, but I think what's really important here is that it's really is talking about starting this plan in middle school, because you have to have it in place no later than grade 9, and hopefully you're starting in grade 7 or 8.
And
a lot of our
out,
middle schools are not
it is a tool for
that.
Counselors to help the students that they are responsible for and their families. It's not an intent. It's not the intention is not to supplant them.
I'm sure counselors would support this.
Yeah, it's a tool to help. Yeah,
anything
them.
That backs up their role. Because a lot of the counselors tell me the principals don't really understand what their role is, and so they're expendable.
Mm-hmm.
They hire them, yeah, but.
Madam Chair.
Yeah, Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me try this again. We don't have adequate numbers of counselors in our schools, whether or not it's middle school or our high schools. And my point is simply that if we funded what we knew to be helpful to our students, perhaps we wouldn't see legislation like this coming forward. I'm not opposed to the legislation. I'm merely trying to point out that this is coming to us because of a deficiency that we have in the overall system. And I think that if we had appropriate numbers of counselors in our schools, that this type of planning would, in fact, take place. The planning's not taking place not because we don't know or recognize that it's needed. The planning's not taking place because we simply do not have the resources in our schools to do this.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I concur with that comment, but I wanted to ask you, Senator Pappas, if you would be so kind. You talked about Senate File 651, which is the education and career plan that you introduced, and what when I compare these two, I don't quite, other than some languages, that it seems to achieve the same thing, and 651 adds a college readiness assessment, and I'm just curious to know why do we look at 2446 when we already have Senate File 651? I got a little confused about
well,
what, 651 why we're doing both.
Is not really, it's in the possession of the Finance Committee, but it's really in Senator Stump's committee. And it was introduced last year, and I don't remember if I had a hearing on it or not. I did not? Okay, I did not have a hearing on it for whatever reason. And so when Senator Ress came up with this excellent idea and Representative Peterson talked to me about it, I thought it was a good chance to revisit this, that our committee thinks this is a good idea, and we should send Senator Ress's bill to Senator Stump and remind him about Senator 651, that maybe they should do something
maybe
with these two bills, merge them, and you know, and figure out something to do with them. And for those of you like Senator Wieger, who loves counselors and maybe loves the idea of the six-year plan, or maybe it's growing on him, I think it would be great to see if K-12 would do something in this area.
Thank you, Senator Pappas.
Senator Wieger?
Yes, so, Madam Chair, I think it's an excellent proposal and would hope there could be some continued conversation with the E-12 policy, and it's very timely. We have a report that the Commissioner of Education is going to be issuing soon on college readiness, career readiness that was required by the legislature in the E-12 omnibus bill. And if you look at the recommendations coming in terms of some changes on tests, it gets into early identification, those dashboard indicators,
mm-hmm.
and we have to look at an implementation date, and the counselor issue is obviously very, very important, but you know, there's concepts here that I hope we can act on this session.
I think Senator Rest is asking that it be within, where did I read it? Included in, oh shoot, what does it say? What do we call those things? Oh, well, I'll find it in a minute.
Senator Tomasoni's budget?
No.
What are those things we require that all K-12 schools do? Can help me out, you guys. You have to have standards. You have to have goals. Graduation standards. Thank you. Be included in the graduation standards, which is great, which I think is a great idea. Okay, any more comments? Yes, Senator Senjum.
Madam Chair, and I'm just trying to identify responsibility. On line 1.11, it talks about school districts must assist all students. And who ultimately is responsible then for ensuring the plan occurs? It would sound like the school district in that line, at least, is the assister. Are they also the body or the entity that's responsible for the plan occurring, or is this a student responsibility?
Senator Rust or Ms. Amson?
Senator Senjum, we believe that each school district is best able to decide how to best implement what plan they need. So we would put that responsibility with each school district to make the best decision for their students.
I think the question, though, is it a school district slash counselor responsibility, or is it a student response, student slash parent responsibility?
I think it could be said that it's both. The students would be required to update their plan annually so that there's, and if you're using like the Navion system, just because I'm more familiar with that, counselors, parents, teachers can get into that plan to see if the students have actually done any work on it. And it so the students would have a piece of the responsibility, as would the school district. But the plan is it should be accessible to the parents, so the parents can see what their students doing. It should be accessible to their teachers to find out if there's maybe something going on that they didn't know about, that they can assist the student, the counselors. So it should be kind of a shared responsibility between a school district and their students.
But Senator Senjum, as I read it, you would have to have this plan in order to graduate. So that is a student responsibility then.
Madam Chair.
Senator Senjum.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Where does it say that? And I'm not saying it doesn't. I just haven't caught that yet. Is there a line referencing what you just said?
I think it's on 214 and 215.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Wieger.
I think you could reasonably interpret, though, it's not required for graduation. It should be, but the only mandate is for the school district to make available such a plan. It seems that it's discretionary. It's encouraged for students and parents, but not required. And a heads up, there will be a story fairly soon about 10% or so of students that are under high standards. Legislatively, we've required that you have to pass the reading and writing to graduate in this room. Unless something happens really significant in the remediation efforts. And I hear that a lot of these students did not go through remediation. And what did those parents do along that way? And I'm sure if there would have been a requirement that they say we're going to participate in this plan, just as you have an IE plan in special ed, but it's very important that students actually commit themselves, particularly those that might be higher at risk, particularly those that are in that achievement gap that we're trying to narrow. Totally close. So it's very, very important. I don't read it, though, as being required for a student. It should be.
I don't know. It says must. On line 1.11, it says must. On 1.14, it says must. On 2.14, 2.15, it says it applies to students graduating in 2013-2014, so it seems
that there would be plans, Madam Chair.
There would be plans,
but I don't think it says it doesn't require their participation. But maybe
Madam Chair,
what's your intention?
I think it is meant to be a mandate. It's just a funded one, and it's meant to be a requirement. Now, if the language doesn't do that, I was wondering if you were going to send this bill to Senator Stump's committee. I think
they can look at that.
That the way in which they, if they supported the program, that the way in which they saw it being integrated with the graduation standards, that that would be an appropriate decision for them to make.
Right. Okay, who would like to make the motion? Senator Wicker?
Sure.
Senator Wicker moves that Senate Bill 2446, not amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the full Finance Committee. Any more discussion? Anybody in the audience want to comment? I'm sorry, I forgot to ask. All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay.
Madam Chair.
Oh. I'm sorry, I didn't look. I didn't see you. Come forward, please. We haven't finalized the vote. And someone just want to get.
You just need to stand.
Pull a chair forward or give him a chair. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Amundson.
My name is Chris Moe. I'm the lead counselor for St. Paul Public Schools, and I'm also the president-elect of the Minnesota School Counselors Association.
Oh, congratulations.
So, Senator Lynch, thank you for your words there and everyone else. I just want to say, when we look at Naviance and this college planning, it's something that all school counselors have been trained. We're licensed school counselors. We have master's degrees. So what I'm trying to say is that Naviance is just a piece of the puzzle. Yes, we need more school counselors, and we're going to be pushing that. MSCA is going to be pushing that consistently, and all of you have heard our voices. And so if Naviance is a tool that can help us with that, we support that. But, yes, our number one priority is getting more school counselors in the building. So.
And I do want to brag for a minute is that St. Paul really pioneered the six-year plan. And because I've heard about it for many years, and I'm glad now it's starting to pick up. Other districts are starting to pick up on
that. Yeah, and to piggyback off Senator Wicker, you know, the six-year plan was implemented, but it was not a requirement. I mean, it was highly recommended that we get every kid through a six-year plan, but it was not made a graduation. There was not a lot of accountability by the district to follow up with that. But once again, we need more school counselors to implement all these programs. And Naviance is a piece that we use in St. Paul and we use throughout the state, and it's an excellent source to help kids.
We had a demonstration in Naviance a couple weeks ago. So
yeah. But I just wanted to put my input there. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Moe. Okay, Senator Wicker renews his motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members.
Okay, we have just a couple more items on our agenda. We have like 10 minutes. Senate file 2364. And this is just a short bill, so I'm not going to move, but maybe Ms. Remedios, yes. Welcome. The Higher Education Finance Authority would like to raise their bond limit, and if you would just want to talk to us briefly about who you are and what you do and why you want to raise the bond limit.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Mary Ann Remedios, the Executive Director of the Higher Ed Facilities Authority. I'm here to speak on behalf of this Senate File 2364 to answer any questions. This bill enables the authority to continue helping private, nonprofit colleges borrow money for their capital improvements. It does not request an appropriation and will create construction jobs. The Higher Ed Facilities Authority was created in 1971 in order to help private nonprofit colleges and universities get tax-exempt bond financing. The authority issues the bonds, the proceeds of which are loaned to particular institutions to be used to acquire, construct, or renovate buildings and to acquire equipment. The bonds are secured only by the credit of the borrowing institution and any reserves or special guarantees provided by that borrower. The bonds are not the debt of the state and have no effect on the state's credit or debt limits. The operating expenses of the authority are paid from fees from each borrower in connection with their bond issue. The authority has never received a state appropriation for any reason. Our enabling statute states that we can only have a certain amount of bonds outstanding at any given time. The limit is currently $950 million. As of June 30, 2009, we had approximately $830 million outstanding. By June of this year, we expect to have approximately $900 million outstanding, and by June of next year, 2011, we're likely to be very close to that $950 million limit. The authority has issued an average of $123 million per year in the past 5 years. After taking into account refinancings and payments of principal, the total amount has grown an average of $50 million a year during the same 5 years. To avoid seeking emergency action next year and possibly disrupting the financing plans of colleges and universities, we respectfully ask for an increase in the debt limit at this time.
Okay, any questions from the members?
Madam Chair.
When's the last time you asked for a debt limit?
2007.
2007, and that was from what to 900?
It went up to 800 million from, I think, 650.
650 to 950. It's crossed off. It says 950 was the latest one.
That, I'm sorry. Yes, it went up to 950.
From 650?
I'm going to look at my green chart here. Let's see. I believe it went from 650.
Okay, so it's going up another 400 million. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, we had a big discussion on in E12 this morning about developing a bond authority for charter schools. And it's interesting. I mean, I know there's differences from what you're talking about because there is no pool that backs up the bonds, no particular government entity that backs it up, but it's just the institution. Mm-hmm. And they were speculating as to what the interest rates could be with the new proposal that we're looking at for the charter schools. Do you know what have your interest rates been coming in at?
We haven't issued a bond issue since the fall, and it depends so much on the credit of the borrowers. Our borrowers range from a AA down to BAA, and most of them have some sort of credit rating, but a few do not have. I suspect that the charter schools would not have an investment grade rating and so be quite high. It would be very specific to a borrower, so I hesitate to say what it would be. But generally speaking, tax exempt rates are lower than taxable rates, which is why it's so attractive for nonprofits.
Madam Chair,
Senator Roebling.
So what is and what were your rates the last time you let bonds?
I think the true interest cost was, I think, below 5% for a very long bond issue, say 30 years. That's another factor that is taken into account. The credit rating of a particular borrower as well as the length of the financing makes a difference. The longer it is, it drives the interest rates a little bit higher than one that matures in, say, 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Okay, any more questions? Any concerns about this, Senator Wieger?
Either Ms. Remedios or Council.
Yes.
Is there any statutory guidance as to how this should be capped or?
Madam Chair, and Senator, our statute has a provision that says that how much bonds we have outstanding. And every so often we come in, as I am coming in this time, to ask for an increase. And this is an opportunity for me to describe the authority and come before the legislators to explain what we do. So every so often it's raised. I believe the original amount was something like $100 million, and it's over time has ratcheted up. I don't know if you all received the memo that we prepared that has the charts, but it shows that it's gradually gone up over time. The last time we got an increase was in 2007, and I believe before that was in 2000.
Why don't you make that available to the committee? We did not get it.
Just a minute, please.
Senator Pappas.
In the audience here is the executive director, or the president of the Private College Council, and I prepared a number of copies, and he has them with him. So I think he's... President also Rechnick is okay. Ready to hand them out.
Okay. Senator Sharon.
I'm wondering, these increases that are approved, 2007 was a move to 950 and now to $1.3 million or $1.3 billion. What is this in relationship to? Is there a... is this a percent of an overall amount, the payback? What are you growing in terms of future obligation, and what is that in relationship to? that what the, where you're taking money that money that's obligated to other obligations? Are you increasing the percentage of the overall revenue stream for debt reduction rather than for operations, for example?
Mr. Medios.
Yes. The dollar amount that's gone up from 950 to what we hope will be $1.3 billion is the principal amount outstanding on the bonds that can be issued and remain outstanding at any given time. We issue on behalf of our borrowing colleges. So anyone from St. Thomas, a very large issuer, to Gustavus Adolphus down in St. Peter, all the way up to St. Scholastica, they've all participated in our program. And so individually, they have borrowed a certain amount of bonds. And if you aggregate them, and what we have outstanding hits our limit of $950 million, we will not be able to issue any bonds for any other colleges that come. The closer we get to it, it becomes a situation of first come, first serve, and whoever gets the application in first.
Senator Pappas,
Sharon.
I think you're telling me that these are just for private institutions.
Yes.
That's the critical piece. Okay, thank you.
It seems like kind of a big jump in a very short period of time. Because mm-hmm. 2007, you came in for an increase, and now it's only 3 years later. Mm-hmm. And did you say that because there are some pending projects that the private colleges are expanding?
Yes, they are. They have been very aggressively borrowing in the past 5 years. In the past 10 years, we've averaged about $9 million in debt. Not all of the colleges are borrowing it at the same time. And the size ranges from $8 million up to maybe $80 million or more. And so it's quite a variety. They might do a single building, such as a science building or a dormitory, or they can do a collection of things, such as fire sprinklers and replacing the roofs, updating their boiler systems, and so forth. And so the nature of the projects varies. We encourage them to borrow in the aggregate because the cost of issuance can then be spread out over a large amount of projects. So it just makes more sense financially to do it that way. The bond issues have grown so that in the past 5 years, we've averaged $120 million every year instead of the $90 million in the previous years. I like to joke that it used to be for $10 million you could have something, and nowadays you can hardly do a building for $10 million. And so there is some of the cost of construction has increased.
Well, this, I know it's a good time for construction because we want to employ people. This could be another jobs bill. Yeah, and how long do you think this will last you then?
We hope at least 3 years. Well, that is to say, we hope or we don't hope. It's always a good sign if the colleges are borrowing because they're going to the public market. It shows that they're strong enough to afford the debt. This is not a line of credit through desperate working capital. This is all to build something new or to attend to maintenance. We don't want them in a situation of deferred maintenance. So that's a good sign, I think, to say that we think it'll take about 3 years.
Okay. Any more questions, discussion? Okay, then Senator Sharon moves that Senate Bill 2364 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prepared. Motion is passed. Also, I just wanted to announce that we will probably also include this in our article in the big finance bill just for safety purposes. So it's called dual track.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Then I'm sorry, members, we're going over just a few minutes, but the Office of Higher Education had some more proposed introductions. Tricia Grimes and George Rodler, and we wanted to just get those before the committee since we have to do our bill next week. And do you have stuff to hand out?
Madam Chair, I have one handout here. I'll try to be really quick. We were asked to talk about, we have a proposal to increase borrowing limits in our self-loan program. The self-loan program is a loan program that students primarily use to borrow to help fund their college education if they want to borrow more than they can borrow from the federal government. You have to have a creditworthy cosigner. Right now, the maximum they can borrow is $7,500 per year for, and we want to, and for undergraduates, $9,000 for grad students, and we want to raise that to $10,000 per year for students in four-year programs and for graduate students. And we would make corresponding changes to the borrowing, the maximum amount students can borrow, and the repayment terms to extend the period of time to pay, repay these larger amounts.
And if you've sent us that language?
Yes, Madam Chair, your staff has that language. And the thing we want to make clear here is that this is a proposal that would be in language that would be in front of you, I gather, perhaps when you have your committee portion of the bill. There will also be a governor's bill that will be introduced very shortly.
Very shortly?
Madam Chair, it's at the revisor's office now for its final changes. And we did not, when we started the process, anticipate that the committee would be acting quite so soon on some of these pieces of legislation.
Next week.
Right. The language that your staff has is exactly the same as the language that will be in the governor's bill.
So we're expecting the self-loan language? Okay.
And just this change would not apply to students in two-year programs because the people who underwrite the bonds have more stringent requirements for students in two-year programs because historically in the federal programs they have higher default rates. So it would apply mainly to students in four-year programs and grad students. We actually do not think most of these students will be borrowing more overall. Many private lenders have gotten out of the business of providing privately funded student loans, and so we think this will mainly be students will borrow a little more from us and a little less from private lenders. There are 200 lenders that have gotten out of the business nationwide of providing private student loans. So that's a real short description of the student loan increase. Our other project is a proposed fee increase in our fees that fund private institutions regulation. Would you like Mr. Rodler to talk about
please.
That?
Yes.
George Rodler, the manager of private institution registration and licensing for the Office of Higher Education. We have a proposal to increase the fees for both the licensing and the registration, which are two separate programs, the licensing for non-degree programs and the registration for degree-granting programs. The last time the licensing fees were raised, the licensing part specifically was in, I believe it was 04, around 2000. Registration was about 2004. The fees that we generate from these two programs are deposited into special funds in the office and used to support the two programs. About 2008, we had some, I don't want to call them extra funds because we didn't believe they were extra funds in those programs. And in a process to help balance the state budget, $100,000 of those funds were taken for that purpose.
What year was that, Mr. Rodler?
I believe that was in 08.
Oh, in 08.
Yes.
Madam Chair, that was an initiative of this committee.
We've also, in the last few years, changed some of the budgeting and accounting within the office to start charging the two funds for the use of the Attorney General, which is periodic. It's not a regular event, but it is periodic. And a single occurrence where we get involved in a dispute with one of the schools can easily run over $15,000 in a matter of a very few months. The new fees for the degree-granting schools would primarily go to the entirely new schools coming into the state or schools starting within the state. The existing schools, their renewal fees would go from what are now $950 annually to $1,200. But the new schools would pay a substantially higher fee than they currently do. It's $1,100 now, and it would go to somewhere between $200 and $3,500, depending upon the type of school that was coming in and how many degrees they were going to offer. And it could actually be more than $3,500 if a school came in that wanted to offer, say, 20 or 30 different degrees. Some of the large chains will do things like that. The licensing fees currently are between $430 and $1,150 for renewals. Those would now become $1,200 across the board. The varying fees that currently exist depend on one program or more than one program, and accredited schools and non-accredited schools. And the proposal would be just a flat $1,200 renewal fee with a maximum of $2,000. If schools are offering multiple programs, they would pay an additional $200 for each additional program up until they got to a $2,000 maximum fee. And again, the proposal would impact entirely new schools much more, with those fees going from $1,500 initial to $2,500 initial, I believe it is, if I remember correctly. And additional fees, again, if they were going to come in and offer multiple non-degree programs, because that's on the licensing side.
Madam Chair, I don't know if you have any more questions on this issue. I was wondering if you wanted Mark Misukanis to go over the supplemental budget proposed reductions for the Office of Higher Education.
Yes.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, for the record, Mark Misukanis with the Office of Higher Education. You have in front of you a chart that Ms. Grimes handed out. However, this is one that we went over last week, so I'm not sure how much detail you wanted on this, because we did go over it. If you wanted more specifics about the office reduction itself, I can speak to those. But I guess this was a request made to the office to speak to this, but I'm not sure how much detail you wanted.
Well, we only have a few minutes, so I guess we can't do too much detail. We might have to do more next week. So just why don't you just do it briefly?
Madam Chair, then I'll do that. You've, of course, heard about, again, I'm just working off this single-page document. You heard about you're aware of the state grant reductions. and those are on the first line there. The work study, $2.5 million. Again, Madam Chair, I just went over this last week. Maybe I'll just speak to the office reductions.
Okay.
On that administrative level, which is on the bottom of that, the $60,000 in the first year and the $81,000 in the second year reflects a 3% cut reduction, and the other remaining ones are a bit smaller. The intent in the office is to simply retain or keep some open positions open. We're down 4 positions right now from 2 years ago, and I think that's essentially the only way we can, because we're such a small agency that there's not much else to reduce.
The governor is booking $9 million across all administrative agencies that comes in the State Department budget. I saw it. Are you anticipating that you have to come up with any of that $9 million?
Madam Chair, we don't have clear directions from Andrew in budget yet. Our CFO, Mr. Geary, and myself have talked about this. That would, again, be essentially another $81,000, I think, on top of that fiscal 11 cut. That's the equivalent number.
It's like your percentage of that.
Yeah, because that would be that additional 3%.
Okay.
The directions we've kind of gotten from that agency is that they're going to try and save some money in other areas to come up with part of the nine. And then whatever they can't find, they'll allocate to agencies. They've not given us any direction on how that allocation process would work.
Okay.
And they thought that they would find savings in space rents and IT areas. And frankly, I'm a bit skeptical that they'll be able to find much there. So my guess is all $9 million would be allocated to agencies across the state. Madam Chair, at that point, and again, we've talked internally, we have no plans for
it yet. I forget what we've talked privately and what we've talked in the committee. I wanted to make sure that the committee had a chance to hear this. Next week, Ms. Ryan, the plan is, are we going to have our draft on Tuesday or Thursday?
Madam Chair, we will have our draft on Tuesday.
On Tuesday. So that would be the time when we'll see the full draft and members will be able to ask questions and if they have any concerns. So, okay, thank you very much. Sorry you got rushed at the end. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.